The leaders of the world's great religions met for a second day Tuesday in the Italian hill town of Assisi. Some 200 faith leaders, politicians, academics, and journalists have been discussing ways to promote greater understanding and reconciliation between cultures and different religious traditions. The two-day conference, first organized 20 years ago by Pope John Paul II and the Rome-based lay community St. Egidio, has become a yearly event, hailed by many as an increasingly relevant response to heightened tensions between faith communities over fanaticism and global terrorism. In an 8-page message read out to participants at the opening of the conference Monday, Pope Benedict said religion should never be used as a justification for war, and he appealed to religious leaders to use their faiths to encourage peace. A series of panel discussions was arranged to discuss issues like these. Emer McCarthy is in Assisi and filed this report.
The meeting opened Monday morning with a message from Pope Benedict XVI, a message of encouragement calling for a renewal of dialogue and an end to the misuse of religious ideologies to promote sectarianism and war. A message that also emphasized prayer, dialogue, and education in the eradication of extremism, and at the other end of the scale, indifference. Monday afternoon, the panels took a closer look at the role of the family in religious education, at religious tolerance in Africa, at the plight of Lebanon's people. These discussions were chaired by figures such as Orthodox Metropolitan Bishop Emmanuel from the Ecumenical Patriarchate, who highlighted ideologies which unite all great religions, the need to protect human life from birth to its natural end, to promote and safeguard the family as the hearth and home of religious education. Without education, ignorance can lead to indifference. Monday, the challenge of secular humanism was also tackled, a new addition to the roundtable discussions, a prominent theme in the teachings of Benedict XVI. Speaking before talks commenced, Anglican Bishop Richard Chartres of London explained to me how the new trend to identity shop often leads to the birth of religious extremism.
Of course, as the 21st century has unfolded, there has in many ways been a retreat into ghettos. There has been a great deal of anxiety about identity in the West. There's been a considerable insecurity which arises from and is associated with identity shopping. And there is throughout much of the rest of the world a reaffirmation on identities in which religions are often co-opted and used. And so we have a situation where for good and for ill, religious convictions and institutions are unignorable in the public arena, as certainly in the UK they weren't only a very short time ago. There is alarm and anxiety.
Indeed, Pope Benedict XVI also said that we now live in a pluricultural, multi-religious society, where if we do want to stop the promulgation of ghettoization, sectarianism, then we really do have to look towards the future generations into educating them in their own religious identities and also in their knowledge of other religions.
It's a difficult matter, although obviously very desirable, to combine a deep formation in one's own tradition an embrace of other traditions, but I think it is absolutely essential to hold them both together. Because the problem very much arises from those who are insecure in their identities, and they very often grasp at decontextualized, uncharitable, sectarian versions of their tradition. I had a gathering of Muslim leaders from the UK in my house a month or so ago, and they laid out a very fascinating profile of their community in terms of the experience of four generations. For us, most of the Muslims, of course, are new arrivals from other parts of the world, notably the Indian subcontinent. And the Muslim leaders were saying, well, if you're looking at our last four generations as a community, grandma, well, she'd moved to Europe, but mentally she was still where she was brought up and born, and she was still totally immersed in the old culture. her daughter was still attached to the faith and still praying, but more and more distant from the reality of the home country. Her daughter, the grandchild, didn't pray at all. She'd given it all up. It wasn't very useful. It didn't help to for her to make her way in the new society. Her daughter, without a direct link with the tradition, her daughter has got religion again, but in a decontextualized, hot and strong form, which doesn't actually include the wisdom, the accommodations that come from really living with the narrative over many generations. And so we have this extraordinary phenomenon in Europe of people who aren't poor, aren't marginalized, but are involved in what is very characteristic of Western society, identity shopping, where they have bought a version of their own historic religion, which is red in tooth and claw and very adversarial and very sectarian. Now, to have turned them on to that has taken our analysis, and I founded and run a centre in London in which Muslims and Jews and people of other faiths are very deeply involved, and we have a good deal of work among young people, particularly young students. And the experience is, of course, that people are turned into these lethal, decontextualized versions of faith after having been groomed and accompanied in gyms, in schools, in universities for quite a long time. So when we are talking about education, this is not a light matter indeed, as I'm sure the Pope knows that it's not a light matter. It is incredibly difficult to hold together, particularly in deracinated places where there is a great deal of identity uncertainty and identity shopping. It is very difficult to hold together a generous appreciation and a profound formation in one's own faith and an embrace of the other. We're going to have great patience. We're going to have the equal energy of those who have in gyms and clubs and universities turned this rather unrooted, restless generation to a lethal version, a decontextualized version of the historic faith. So it is essential to hold these two things together, but nobody should be under any misapprehension of the difficulties of doing so at the present moment in contemporary Europe. So we've been pursuing a very different strategy, a project which we call scriptural reasoning. And this is something which has its origins in a university setting, but we've adapted it for use among networks of young people, particularly Jews, Christians and Muslims. The Abrahamic faith is where we've started in London. And what we do is we set the horizon by reference to some of the questions and challenges which confront us all, notably things like how are we to live together without slaughtering one another, what is our responsibility to the earth. And instead of engaging in polemics and argument, we go to our own scriptures, to Torah, to Quran, to the Holy Bible, and we look for the resources in those scriptures which have some bearing on the general challenge. But we do it together in the same place. I've actually established a great tent in which we all sit on the floor in the City of London in a circle, and we actually derive from our own religious traditions some response to these common challenges. And I can only tell you the experience is this. The experience is, and these are, I'm determined to make a place where hardline people can come, because of the gathering together of clubbable persons, there is no end and no point, really. We're all very nice people. Chief Rabbi and I and the Cardinal in London, we're not about to break the shop up. We're not the problem. We must find methods and ways of actually building new networks among a different generation of people who don't know one another and who need to be brought within a very fertile but challenging spiritual atmosphere. And I can only say the result of scriptural reasoning, which is what we call our process, The result is a profounder conviction in your own tradition. But because we do it in company and accountably to one another, we're not arguing, but we are speaking in the presence of one another. It is an experience which deepens respect for other traditions as well. So as a matter of fact, we are trying to find ways and means in which we can, with integrity, pursue this kind of spiritual exploration, confronting common problems, because quite frankly, let's face it, our traditions have not had to deal with a wired-up world in which human beings have the capacity to end all human life on this planet because we have unimaginable power that we've unlocked. We have never confronted a situation where there is such ecological challenge to the whole globe. We've, of course, always had violence in parts, ecological challenge in little bits and pieces, but we're facing unprecedented challenges about which our traditions may not have thought very profoundly over the centuries. So there are new and fresh things to be brought out of our spiritual traditions if we're honestly confronting some of the common challenges of contemporary life.
One of the new additions to the panel discussions for this year's edition of the World Religion of Meetings is secular humanism. Why do you think this is an urgent issue that must be confronted not only by the Christian world, but also, as it seems, increasingly also by other religions?
Well, in Western Europe, of course, for a very long time, the religious tradition was so unthreatening, particularly in a place like the UK, you didn't really have to worry. It was another cup of tea, vicar. So, why be hostile? And let's be a bit relaxed about it. But, of course, now there's huge anxiety that religion could be a deeply destabilising and destructive force. And you've got two choices, haven't you? You either appeal to the best in faith traditions, or you say, let's take the French way out. Let's banish all religion to the margins of life. Let's get it out of the public arena altogether. Let's make sure that all churches are excluded from schools, which is one of the major issues which confronts us. So you've got a choice. And I think that secular militancy may be expected to rise with the anxiety about the renewed power and salience of religious convictions and religious institutions. And we have this crossroads where we either go deep, appeal to the resources that there are in faith traditions to be transformative and to be part of the solution, or we stop with a real worry that religions can be part of the destructive problem which afflicts our society and attempt to get them out of the public square. I think that's an incredibly short-sighted and shallow analysis of the situation, but I expect it is one that will grow in stridency in the coming years.
And how do we combat this?
Well, I suppose we have to be and appear more Christ-like.
Easier said than done.
Well, that's, there are no deft, quick fixes or technological answers to these spiritual questions. That's what makes it so difficult. You've got to live it and be it.
That was Anglican Bishop Richard Chartres of London. He was speaking there to my colleague Emer McCarthy in Assisi. Well, for more on the World Meeting of Religions in Assisi, you can check out our website news. Just click on VaticanRadio.org.